Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Game Bite Show podcast. I'm your host, Jeremy Lamont, standing in again for LeGrand Jolly, who is out of town for spring break.
Cancun.
Yeah, he's going out there. Woo! LeGrand gone wild.
What was the big spring break destination when you were in high school?
I don't know. Well, you know, when I was in high school, spring break was like you stayed around town and like threw dirt clods. You'd shoot dirt clods with BB guns and stuff.
No, for us it was like either Cancun or Cozumel.
Really?
But my proximity to Mexico was much nearer than Salt Lake.
Yeah, out there in Louisiana, you could just swim across the.
Yeah. Yeah, you really could. You know, take a while.
Well, I'm suspicious of LeGrand because actually in my school district, we're not too far from each other. In my school district here, I think spring break is next week. So I don't know. I think he's taken some liberties, but that's all right. That's
my kids are on spring break this week also.
What this means, spoiler alert, is that I'm going to be able to talk as much trash about Diablo 4 as I want because I played it. So LeGrand.
How'd you get in the open beta?
You have wrought this. So I don't want to hear any complaints. I did. I played a little bit of Diablo 4, just enough to decide that, you know, you might as well be playing any other, you know, I'm not going to get into it too much. Yeah. Like you know, I was like, you know, Torchlight's not bad. Grim Dawn was one. And there was that free to play one too. I was trying to think of,
Path of Exile.
Yeah, that's right. And, I was like, you know,
Diablo Immortal.
It's pretty all right. And I suspect that, you know, there will probably be reasons why this one is so good. There are hints of some good things there, but, you know, I'll get to that.
You would think, this is Blizzard. These are the Diablo people.
Yeah.
But in fact, those are not the Diablo people. The Diablo people are long gone from Blizzard, right?
I think most of them are, yeah. In fact, almost everybody's gone from Blizzard, so...
So maybe... do you think there's, like, an institutional knowledge? Or is there, like, a Diablo Bible that's like, this is how you do a Diablo?
Maybe, but I want to say... Like, I'm sort of a believer in the most mediocre of all outcomes, you know? Like, I actually don't think that it's, a lost art that only certain people can make a Diablo-like game.
Sure.
So I think that they've got budget, and I think they've got talent.
Maybe the real divider is what you just said, budget, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I don't want to sound like I'm too down on it, but I don't know. There are probably people who
are... But you're not big on Diablo anyway.
I was. I played so much Diablo the First.
Diablo 3?
Well, I don't want the gritty reboot of Diablo. I'm talking about the original.
How about one from the last 15 years at least?
Here's the thing. So I progressively played less with each successive game. I literally played like 15 minutes of Diablo 3.
That's what I mean. You're not a big Diablo 3 guy.
No, I liked Torchlight. Torchlight 2 was fine. Mm-hmm. I think just in general, I don't know, just in general, that sort of game is
Didn't you and I, the first game we ever played was probably Torchlight 2?
We did. It was Torchlight 2.
Torchlight 2,
and the thing that I remember about it was, I was like, Dale's just, like, going everywhere. Like, he's not talking to anybody. We're just, like, by the time I get my bearings, he's already running off somewhere.
No, the thing I remember about that is, I gotta sort my inventory or I'm gonna get left behind.
Yeah, I remember that I was the one, like, being slow. Like, you were very, very adept, I guess. I was, you know, I was kind of the fool just getting towed behind. But, I like Torchlight. I don't know what it'll take to get me back into those kinds of games. And maybe, I mean, Diablo 4 started to, did you play it at all?
No, I haven't played it at all. I've been out of town and just not.
Yeah, yeah.
Free.
I was just kind of curious because I played the sorcerer class or the magic user class. And I know everybody's big on the necromancer, but.
I certainly liked it in 3.
I think the more creative that you get with the weapons and stuff, like it kind of the same thing that like Borderlands will do. Like if you can get a big explodey gun, like that's fun. And if you can get like a laser cutter gun, that's fun. And if you can get a gun that, you know, rains down drone Merv bombs or something, that's fun.
Right.
So I think the more it just kind of gets out there and wild.
What was the content or structure of this demo? Was there anything at all like hinting at what the story would be like, or was it like all action?
Kind of. No. I mean, there was, you know, I don't know if you saw the opening cinema that was put out on the internet last year.
I saw like, oh, I did see that, like the preview.
Yeah, the other, it's
CG
a new
thing.
Big bad. She's a girl. She's kind of hot, but also
yeah,
kind of like
Diablo was a girl last time
people.
Also. You wouldn't really? You wouldn't know that because you didn't play it.
If, unless it's revealed in the first 15 minutes.
Diablo, so like in 3, there's this girl, I think her name's Leah. And like, yeah, eventually she basically gets corrupted by the stone that has Diablo's
yeah,
soul.
Yeah, no. So in this, it's like a totally new, they like summon this Lilith from some portal of flesh. And
right.
You know, now she's the mother of Sanctuary and, you know, of she's course. Convincing everyone. You know, there was, theologically, there was kind of a lot going on. Like, they were talking a lot about sin and stuff. And
yeah,
it was kind of interesting in that regard. But, I don't know. Usually it's all just a vehicle for, you know, clicking on things and, you know,
if I remember right, the cosmology, if we'll call it that, of the Diablo world, which is called Sanctuary.
Yeah.
There's like this dragon that was, I guess, like the figure of either light or like the figure of just like everything unified and good. And then, yeah, I do seem to remember there being a Lilith, and she was kind of her presence or was either dividing or bring in the darkness or something like it. It's like back in the creation myth of that whole thing.
They do get into that a little bit. I think this lets you do a pretty straight playthrough for the first 20 levels. Like, you get to go to a particular town and meet your Haradrim guide, and then he goes off and you kind of have to kill
Do you know where
things.
It's set, like, in the timeline? It's like after Diablo 3?
I mean, I assume they're all linear. So
I guess it'd have to be. Yeah, they are. I mean, they do go in, you know, storyline, number order.
There is a hint, though, of some, you know, varied environments and, you know...
Deckard Cain's still dead?
He's not back that I'm aware of. But there's a whole town full of people now. There's, like, NPCs all over it all. I mean, it almost felt like a... what was that? That D&D-style thing. The, Divine... Not Divine Divinity. Original Sin. Original Sin. Where it was that same sort of style. You could still click on things and hit them, but it was also an RPG, and there were a lot of people. I mean, it kind of started leaning a little bit more into that.
I've never played any of those.
Everywhere in,
like,
quests.
You were correct, though. Like, Divine Divinity was the first of those, of that series, right? And then it became Divinity 2.
Original Sin.
Or whatever.
So it's fine. I mean, that's probably, you know, it's not even really my feature moment, but I guess for an intro, that's kind of something I did. And it was fine. It was all right. I'll save it for LeGrand. He can come back and talk about it. Jared, I know, played it a little bit too, so we'll let those guys come back and preside over that. But for this week, we got a big, good show. We got some things to talk about. Dale, you've been out traveling, getting out and getting some sun on your skin, at least in as far as you, you know, move from the hotel
to the
convention center, or whatever. Yeah. let's go ahead. Let's hear how things went. I mean, that's pretty exciting. How'd that all go?
Okay, well, yeah. If you haven't heard, I went to Chicago, the Chicagoland area, Schaumburg, Illinois, to be precise. To the Adepticon convention, which is the, I guess probably worldwide, it's the biggest like miniatures game convention. So it's largely a lot of like Warhammer stuff, but they also have like, other stuff also. So like the Star Wars X-Wing, they have
like war games, like actual
lots
not,
of
not
yeah.
just the miniatures, but miniatures based games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's all of the above. So Star Wars BattleTech. They have a lot of the BattleTech there. In fact, I think there was a BattleTech booth there from Catalyst Games, and they were unveiling like the new BattleTech Kickstarter for the new expansion and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots and lots of these like kind of smaller miniatures game. I think there was one called like Kings of War, and then there was there's one called Conquest, and there's like all these like historical based ones in addition to all the like sci-fi and fantasy ones. Right, there's like, you know, ones that are set in real Earth history.
Well, that's got to be like where this all started, right? Like, I have the vague impression that most of this came from American Civil War, you know, moving the little military guys and the cannon emplacements and stuff like that. Like,
I think
that's got to be where this...
I'm not sure what came first, but it was likely, as you say, it was likely either Civil War or Napoleonic era stuff.
Yeah.
Because there's a great picture somewhere of Peter Cushing, the famous actor who was like really big into... Napoleonic, like historical war game.
He was Grand Moff Tarkin, I believe.
Yeah, he was.
Is that
he
him?
Was.
Yeah.
And apparently, like, he was one of the early famous people.
Enthusiasts. Henry Cavill. He was the dude from The Witcher. He was the
Henry Cavill.
That's Henry Cavill of his day. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah. So at this large convention, there was something like, I don't know if they've had a head count yet, but like in recent years, I think it's been around 6,000 or 7,000 people, right?
Yeah. And, well, they group them into like groups of six, so that you can.
Yeah. So you can roll a d6 and choose one to be your partner.
Right.
But yeah, so I went there and I played in it was an event like that was kind of like spread broken over 3 days for this game, Depth is Titanicus. I think I talked about this before. But yeah, it was there was about probably on the first day there was probably 22 to 24 of us. That seems about right, because yeah, there would have been like 12 games going on at a time. And yeah, we did 3 games that day. And then the second day it was like doubles. Mm-hmm. So I teamed up with my buddy and,
now was this at the proper event itself, or did you guys find some place to,
Yeah. So it's at the event. It was in this place called the Renaissance Hotel Convention Center. It's like all in one thing. Right. And they have a number of very large ballrooms and like a convention floor for like vendor booths and things like that. Mm-hmm. And the main area of the floor, I think, is basically kind of given over to 40K. And then to a slightly lesser degree, I think like X-Wing and or maybe those are the two major ones. And then they have other rooms that are a little bit smaller, but still pretty big, where they had like a mix of games kind of all in these two or three other rooms. So one of them was Age of Darkness, the Horus Heresy game, which is kind of like the, you know, little brother of 40K. And then there was like the Warhammer Age of Sigmar. And then there was Adeptus Titanicus, which I was playing. And then a bunch of other ones, right?
Now, is that why there were 20? Because the reason I ask is because it seems like, I don't know if it's the biggest such convention of its type, I assume there would be like tons of dudes there to play games. But was it just that you guys were the ones playing that one? Or why were there
only 24? we were playing one of the, you know, smaller games in terms of like event headcount. You know, but most people were definitely there to play 40K or one of the others, you know, and in fact, this game is at a different miniature scale. So most of the the miniatures games with like infantry, like soldiers, like space marines and humans and whatnot, those are at about like probably 28mm. And so that's like the height.
Yeah, they're like thumb sized kind of.
Yeah. Yeah. From like,
but
the,
then these, I imagine, the base, with your big stompy mechs, there's like little dudes.
Yeah, well, there are no little dudes in this game, but if there were, they would be like about 6mm high rather than about 28mm high, right?
Right, right, got it.
And the reason I chose to play this game is because, A, it's just a really good and fun game, and it's one that's hard to take seriously because there's a lot of like tables to roll on to see if your mech like blows up catastrophically and how many other mechs near
so
it also
blow
up. They
still do that BattleTech thing, ammo explosions. And
oh, yeah, yeah, all that fun. And nice. it's really fun because it encourages everybody to get in on the action of like trying to kill everybody else's stuff. Right. So, if you get in close, or if you're grouped up and you have 3 or 4, you know, Titans around each other, one of them goes up, there's a decent chance the others are going to be injured or destroyed themselves in the, you know, cause the different things can happen. Like it can just go nuclear on like a roll of a 10 on a D10, or it can do something like spin in a random direction and fire all its weapons at the nearest target, you know, whether it's on your side or their side or what, just things like that. And then like it'll stumble a distance and then fall over, and then anything that's within a certain distance will get hit by it and potentially destroyed also. And so basically it's just kind of a more game you play more for fun and less for like cutthroat competition. And it's a relatively low model count game. So I only took 6 models with me, and I only had to have like kind of one case that I could easily carry onto a plane so that I didn't have to worry about getting there and stuff being destroyed by baggage handlers and whatnot. But yeah, so, 2 solid days of gaming in this one room, and then a third day of walking around the hall and like doing some, just looking at random, you know, there's like dice vendors and people selling, painting supplies and all sorts of hobby materials and things like that. And then people selling like, the miniatures, fan art, all sorts of stuff, you know? And anything you could conceivably think of to use in the assembling, painting miniatures, or playing with them on a table. So like dice mm-hmm. towers and dice trays, you know, like, yeah. all kinds of stuff. I will say I don't think there was anybody playing CCGs. I think it is pretty much all tabletop miniatures games. And I saw some really cool ones with some like extremely elaborate terrain setups that were very impressive. So
that's the thing that always cool. kind of, I feel like, you know, you need a place to put your dudes, and that seems like a barrier to entry.
I saw this one thing, Jeremy, that looked like Castlevania, like the castle from Symphony of the Night.
Big,
on a promontory with like giant spires and like other turrets coming off of the spires.
That's totally
and,
cool if you can do that.
Oh, it was insane. It was like 6 feet tall, you know, on top of a table. So it was like 10 feet tall, or like, you know, 9 feet tall all in all, right? Wow. And then like miniatures all over it and stuff, and you know, like rolling the dice to see who would fall off or whatever. Like all this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad you got there and got back. Any panels, anything besides just the gameplay
there was,
itself?
Yeah, I mean, the first night when, so it was technically like Wednesday, or the gaming was pretty much all Thursday through Sunday with very little on Sunday. But Wednesday night, they had this like Games Workshop preview event. So imagine like an E3 show by like Microsoft or somebody. That's basically what this is for all of the Games Workshop games. And they came out and they announced the 10th edition, the new edition of 40K is coming out this year. They showed a bunch of new models for other game systems as well. Mm-hmm. Horus Heresy, Age of Sigmar, you know, Kill Team, a bunch of the other like little games that they put out. And then they had like a Q&A, and that was pretty interesting. The whole thing was maybe 90 minutes to 2 hours. And so we sat and watched that. And then went and like there was a massive line to pick up our badges to attend the actual event the next day.
Right.
And we, you know what's funny is we got these badges and then we never used them for anything. Like we never had to scan them for anything. I don't think anybody ever really checked to see if you had a badge for anything, at least not for the event that we were in. I mean, it was pretty laid back. I do have to give it that. But
how was the hygiene factor there? I got to ask.
I didn't
average,
you know, I think it was all right. It helped that we weren't forced into very close proximity
close
with people. Yeah. We had like a decent amount of space to move around in. And, I will say that the beers were like $10, $11 each, which was ridiculous for like a bottled Corona, like $11. It's like,
yeah,
only is these like worse than airport prices. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They got you right where they want you.
They do. So I tried to avoid those and at least get something on draft, right? Because you know, because if you're gonna pay out the nose for it, you might as well get the highest quality brew you can.
That's bold. That's good. Well, good. Sounds like it was a good time.
It was.
Glad you got to go out there. Glad you made it. But was your first time at
yeah, first time at one of these. The last time I went to anything like this was, well, I've been to the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, but like, otherwise, it would have been like a Magic Pro Tour qualifier in Shreveport, Louisiana, in like 1998 or something.
Yeah. Good. Well, that's great. Well, glad to have a man on the inside of the scene, just in case something you know, crosses over here with what we do on the Game Bytes Show.
Oh yeah,
podcast.
Oh, there's,
but, and it frequently does. So
lots of Warhammer video games out there.
That's true. Well, good on you. This week I played something aside from Diablo, something that is a brand new release, and it was sort of been hyped up on a lot of different platforms, brand new on the PlayStation 5 and the PlayStation 4. I believe on PC it is an Epic Games exclusive, and kind of interesting. It's a game called Chia. That's T-C-H-I-A.
Oh, it's not like Chia Pets?
Not like Chia Pet. I wish. We've got all these simulators. We've got like lawn mowing, truck driving, bus stopping, no chia planting simulators, I'm afraid. Chia is the name of the protagonist. And here's the thing. So this is one of those, there's sort of like a little mini cottage industry or game genre of independent games kind of with pride and love for some tiny nation somewhere. I can think of a couple of these.
Often it's made by somebody in or from that
from
nation,
there. Yes, right? exactly.
Is that the case here?
It is, yeah. So Chia is set in the not fictitious but actual archipelago island nation of New Caledonia.
Oh, yeah.
Which I've never thought twice about. Yeah, I want to say, the thing is, I'm trying to remember if it's on the Pacific side or the Atlantic side. I could probably look it up.
Isn't it sort of between Australia and South America?
See, I thought it was somewhere kind of like Polynesian-y, sort of.
Yeah, could be totally wrong.
And I think that there's a point out there where the closest people, because if you're, like you're saying, between South America and Australia, you can be out there in the middle of somewhere so that the closest people are actually on the International Space Station, you know, because going east or west.
Yeah, because it's only 200 miles up.
Yeah, and so you end up being like closer to somebody in outer space. So it's somewhere in that area.
I'm looking it up.
Check it out. Check it out.
It's actually very close to very close. It's off the northeastern coast of Australia. Like probably like Brisbane is the closest, or Melbourne maybe.
Well, as I understand it, and I have not looked this up, so I'm totally just off the cuff. Caledonia, I believe, was the name, like an ancient name for England. And
yes.
So this New Caledonia. This island is kind of interesting because it is not like exactly tropical. And it's kind of evergreen coniferous, sort of like you would go there and I don't think that if you were there, I don't think you could necessarily locate yourself climatologically. Like you'd
look around
well,
and say, this is New Caledonia.
Exactly. Like you might think you're somewhere Mediterranean or something like that. So, So this game Chia is based on the people and the language of the inhabitants there of New Caledonia. And I can't tell you really much about that stuff. The game plays like Breath of the Wild. So the titular character, Chia, is a young girl, maybe 10 years old, something like that. And she's got her dad there and he's teaching her, you know, they have like little campfire singouts and stuff. And the game kind of leans into that sort of thing. Like whenever there's a little heartfelt, cultural moments, you know, you're going to do that. They have a thing where you can rattle the kind of fern leaves, the dry fern leaves. And so you to a beat and, you know, it kind of teaches you to maybe appreciate something about the New Caledonian culture there. But Chia, an old family friend comes, they kind of teach about this, interpersonal greeting, you know, you give things and stuff like that. And then her dad ends up being kidnapped by some land developer person and taken away on a, I don't know if it was a spaceship or an airplane. I'll be honest, I haven't been super paying attention to the plot exactly.
Okay.
But so Chia goes, and this is an island thing. So there's a lot of like sailing and like I said, it's an archipelago. So there's different islands that you go to and it has kind of that same openness that you would get from A Breath of the Wild. And the interesting thing is
Zelda game that's set on like an ocean. What was that one called again?
Yeah. Wind Waker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Although there's not a lot to do in any given place, but it's chock full. So you can go swimming anytime and there's, you know, things underneath there that you can kind of go explore reefs and stuff like that. And the game kind of has a sort of light story mode kind of thing going on, but they don't really goad you too much into the critical path or anything like that, which I think might be a little bit to its detriment. It'll give you objectives, but I just kind of had a hard time staying super interested in what was going on.
Is that because the world around it is really interesting to explore and stuff?
Kind of. I mean, it is. And so the thing that kind of is Chia is about is that at one point early on in the game, Chia discovers that she has the power of soul transfer, where you get this greeny sort of glow in one of her eyes and she can like zap out to all kinds of things in the environment, including rocks and dishware. Whoa. And animals,
so
and
things without a soul.
Yeah, exactly. So you can start controlling them and rolling them around, and then at any point she can like fling, like you can kind of, you know how Breath of the Wild had that sort of inertia system where you could like freeze something and then hit it a bunch and then let go and it would like all the built up potential energy would like fling it off. So she kind of has that where you can like be a rock and then roll for a minute and be like, ah, this is dumb, and then just decide to like fling yourself. And then you, if you want to, if you're quick enough, you can soul transfer back into the thing in flight and stuff. So there's a lot of like traversy sorts of things. She has a one of those leaf gliders. So kind of like Link has, and you know, you can kind of like glide and zoom down. Animals, if you transfer into them, you can, you know, fly, you can trot as deer. They go really fast over land, and there's a meter, so you can't stay there forever. But,
so what happens to her body when she, you know, throws her soul into something else?
Right? She sort of like fully zaps into it. So it's not just necessarily that like her essence goes, but she, you know, you like warp into the thing.
Cause I was going to say like, does like the deer soul go into her body and then like it doesn't know what
it was like
to
a Freaky Friday kind of thing and
or
no,
like
not really.
There's an Anne Rice book, The Tale of the Body Thief, where like superhuman, you know, god tier the vampire like Lestat like decides to live as a human again, you know, because there's this guy that comes up to him, he's like, hey, I can swap our souls, and then like an idiot, he falls for it, and then like then the guy doesn't want to give his like super, you know, god tier body back, and he has to like I was like, this book is stupid.
I would say that you've probably thought more about that than Chia spends time thinking about
probably.
It. The environment is very low technology. You meet people. Well, I mean, it's sort of like a lot of countries where there is a very low tech, very close-knit sort of tribal kind of culture. But then in certain parts of the country, and I don't think this is actually like literally the layout of New Caledonia or anything, but then there are places with buildings and modern conveniences and cars and things like that, and so you can kind of you know, part of it is you go for to like a social services place and take a ticket, you know, because you need to learn the ways of something, you're going to talk to some mentor who's going to help you out and stuff. And I'll be honest, I didn't get super far into the story just because, again, I think that they are really very interested in helping you to appreciate the place and the people and, you know, the little interactions. And
how else,
you know,
are you ever going to visit New Caledonia? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, exactly. And I did find, so in that same sense, I'm like actually kind of genuinely interested in the fact that a small team from there decided that they're going to make a game completely based on Breath of the Wild. And they're going to say, you know what, our little nation has a flavor to it, and we're going to, you know, we're gonna put it in.
It's like a Hyrule, but in real life.
Kind of. And there's mini games of things like rock stacking. You know, those what do you call those things where you stack rocks? I don't know. You make like a little pillar or something out of it. Yeah, like a cairn, something like that. So there's little challenges for that. There's little melodies you can learn to play on your ukulele that will give you new abilities and things like that. Sort of a lot of little things to kind of take your attention. So it's I don't think that there are very many independent games that have tried to break into that Breath of the Wild space, particularly with
except
an emphasis.
Genshin Impact.
That's you're right. No, that's the one. And I don't know that that's necessarily indie, but it was like a straight direct thing, and they made it into a gacha game. But this is the next one that I can think of that's sort of like that, but they decided to make it a little love letter to this New Caledonian thing. So it's kind of fun. I think thumbs up, maybe for like kids.
Yeah.
I think that for an adult. Especially if you're, I mean, you might as well play the Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom or whatever. I don't know when that's even coming out. I'm sure it's next couple months or something, but, I think that this, I actually, in fact, so I have a confession to make. I co-played this with my daughter, and she was the one. I was like, oh, you should play this. Like, I was kind of curious to see what it was, but I could sort of tell it wasn't really going to be for me. And so as she mostly played it, I was like, oh, what do you do here? Go over that. You know, what do you think about this? And so I was kind of the co-pilot for this game. Kind of watching her go through it. Kind of like she actually went back to it once on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there could potentially be something there.
I'm not sure. She's like 12 or something, 14.
No. She's 14. Now, okay. So middle teenager. And, I think it's just enough that a kid, and particularly a girl, like I don't think there's necessarily like a girl game, but you know, the protagonist is a young girl that's maybe a little younger than her. It is based on kind of like cute animals and stuff like that. There was a point at which when these animals were running around, she figured out that if she hits the deer with a slingshot, like it would like literally like fall over like a fainting goat. And then she was going to like try and soul blast it off the edge into the water and stuff like this. So, you know, so there's there's little things there for everybody, for all types. But I do feel, and it's beautiful. Like, this thing is, you know, the sunsets and the water effects are really good, and there's just always something to kind of take your attention. And you can see, again, just like in Breath of the Wild, you can see everything, you know, stuff off in the distance, a place to go, and there's something there, and it's interesting. Right. But there's just something about it that's a little bit, a little bit too heartfelt, maybe, for your average adult man.
A little too earnest.
A little too earnest. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. You know, for those who are into kind of that Moana kind of vibe, like, I want to go out and be on the ocean and sail around on my, on my little,
you know, catamaran. that could be me on like a rainy Saturday or something, you know, like, you never know.
And it's not bad. Like, it's not dumb. It's not, you know, it could take your attention for an afternoon or something to kind of play around, and sure, you might end up really liking it. And I know that it got a lot of boosting on social media. I know Sony had a thing for it. I know that the studio did a lot of interviews and things. So it's got some notice, and in that sense, being, by the way, this is a PS Plus middle tier extra, PS Plus extra day one release. And so, you know, they've kind of got that, you know, try it out if you've got PS Plus. And again, in that sense, I think you totally could if that's a service you subscribe to. Other than that, on PC, again, currently I believe it is exclusive to Epic Games Store. But I'm sure that it will get further, you know, further distribution as windows of exclusivity close. But yeah, so that's Chia. That is from Kepler Interactive, I guess. And I had never thought twice about the little island nation of New Caledonia, but now I know that it exists, and I have Chia to thank for that. So that's what I played this week.
Sweet. That's pretty cool. Well, yeah. Next up, we have a new release. But is it, though? A new release? We are referring here to Resident Evil 4, the remake, but seriously, this time, like, it is actually like remade this time, right?
Yeah. And they've actually changed some plot points. Like, I've seen people joking on social media about Leon now speaks like a little bit of Spanish or something like that, where before he didn't. And
well, he's been to this town like a million times. He's picked some up.
Have they done all of the Resident Evil games? I mean, they did two. They started with two, right? Like, they haven't remade the first one.
Well, no, they did on the GameCube, right?
That I'm talking about the most, like, the latter, in the last 3 years.
Two, I guess, was the first one.
And four now. Is that right? I feel like that's right.
I haven't really been following them all that closely, but that sounds right. Like, they didn't do Zero or the first one. Or Code Veronica. Maybe that's next, because that was actually the fifth, wasn't it? It did come out after four, or did it? Did it come out?
I want to see him make a straight faced version of the Mia Jovovich movies, like the movie version of.
Capcom gets into the movie making. No, they make movies just so that they can remake the Resident Evil movies.
Yeah, make everybody sick of the new adaptations, so that they bring you back and make the things you already played.
Well, there are also a few leaked new Destiny guns. I mean, I have 100% confidence that all of these are actual Destiny guns. You know, leaked as they are in that way, full of subterfuge in the new releases list. Yeah. Omen of Sorrow. I don't know. What do you think that is?
I think Omen of Sorrow is something that goes from a distance. I think that's either going to be a bow or
sniper rifle.
Maybe a sniper rifle. Yeah.
Could be. Storyteller. I think that's probably like a hand cannon, because it's like scrimshawed.
Yeah.
Like, you know, with like filigree on the barrel and stuff. Terra Nil. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what this is.
Actually, Terra Nil is probably, I'm going to say, a Void sidearm.
Oh, okay. The Void. Void.
Yeah,
okay.
The Nil. Huh.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I was thinking,
I,
like,
it'll disintegrate you if you get a...
I guess I was thinking like a splash damage rocket launcher or something. Maybe. But I guess we'll see in the next Destiny update. Though.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes our source there at Destiny 2 is not exactly specific with us. So
yeah.
Well, very good. Over in the new, in the freebies area, the only thing that I know for sure that's coming out for PS Plus for April, I feel like normally they would have announced it by now, so I might just not be seeing it. But I know there is going to be a day one release of a game called Meet Your Maker. Which is a sort of in the way that in like Fallout 4 and I don't know, Conan Exiles, you know, you could build your own like home base and stuff like that.
Yeah.
This Meet Your Maker game on PS Plus is a game where you make your own death trap dungeon type situations, and then other players come in and try and beat them. And so it's kind of got this this wasteland kind of vibe to it. And you get to build up like either giant towers, make them full of, you know, dead ends and traps and guns and flamethrowers coming out of the walls and, you know, trick doors and floors and things like that. And then other people come and try and, you know, defeat your great constructions. So I'm kind of looking forward to trying that out. Sometimes those things where you build your own stuff, it's a little bit more commitment than I am. You know, but I'll try and defeat somebody's tower maybe. So that's cool. The only thing I know for sure. We got some news out there. This is kind of interesting, especially considering that LeGrand was giving you a hard time about Roblox a little bit earlier today, because I actually think this is super interesting. Epic, I can't remember what the event was, but they had done a bunch of Unreal Engine, you know, facial animation things. They had a thing where a lady got on and stood in front of a phone, like literally on a phone, and it captured her face and made a pretty decent rigged 3D model of her face from that. And they did it on stage, and it only took like a couple minutes. They also did a facial animation demo for Senua from Hellblade 2, which looked amazing. But one of the things that they announced for this is a whole bunch of tools for Fortnite content creators. And they're part of a suite of tools called the Unreal Editor for Fortnite. UEFN is how they're abbreviating it. Unreal
I think
Editor
they can do better than that.
For Fortnite. Yeah, I know. So what they're doing is they're taking Unreal Engine 5, which is the current state of the art engine. Mm-hmm.
Meat cube generated.
Yeah, the gel cube. They're basically allowing Fortnite to be modded in pretty much the same way that Roblox, I think, has been. They're going to make all kinds of middleware for people to just do all kinds of things, including, you know, most people. I've seen that there's a movement to try and recreate the season one, season two, early on Fortnite maps. And I guess they're just going to let
thus far, there hasn't been any user-generated content in Fortnite. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Only maybe in what they used to have as the Save the World mode. At least in that one, you could build bases and stuff, right?
Yeah, correct. You would get to set your own. But it's very limited, though. And so
did they have UGC? I guess not, probably.
Is that how that works? I don't know.
User-generated content.
But with this, they're actually giving you pretty much middleware programming-grade tools to be able to make all kinds of things. And Epic is going to be sharing 40% of any revenue with creators who make content for the game.
So they really are going after Roblox.
Which they're wanting to incentivize it. Yeah. And this is available right now. So people are presumably...
You know what I think the problem is going to be with this approach? I think it's going to be generational. Because there's some generation, there's some dividing line where people above this line are into Epic and Fortnite. People below this line couldn't care less because they're into Roblox.
That could be, but I think that if you could play something that looks cool and, you know, I think that it will be a pretty good step up for kids who are graduating from Roblox.
Maybe from one to the other?
Up to the next level, yeah. So
maybe.
I guess this was just at the State of Unreal presentation at the Game Developers Conference last week. So anyhow, it'll be interesting to see what
To the desert of the Unreal.
It'll be interesting to see what messes this makes and copyright infringement. I'm sure there's going to be something weird that comes out of this. Someone's going to sue someone for dances. I don't know.
I'm going to make an AI generate a lawsuit on
this.
The thing
that I think is really interesting about this, though, is that, do you remember for a while people have been saying that if there's a Web 3.0, that it's going to be Fortnite? And I was always like, you know,
I don't know what Web 3.0 is going to look like, but I know that Web 4.0 is going to be sticks and stones in the dirt.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the famous quote, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I guess keep your eyes peeled for content out of Unreal, from Fortnite, for the Unreal Engine for Fortnite editor. Watch out, Roblox. The big kids now are going to play in that sandbox. So, a couple of other things floating around the web this week that I thought were kind of interesting. God of War, of course, big famous reboot 2018, mm-hmm. and now God of War Ragnarok last year won lots of awards and is just genuinely really cool. It seems like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is experiencing a little bit of a renaissance. And Well, there's a movie coming out. So there's the new kind of Spider-Verse looking Ninja Turtles thing. There are soundtracks coming out on vinyl, the entire live action 1989 to 1993. Live action Ninja Turtles has kind of been going around again. I feel like I've seen Ninja Turtles. Shredder's Revenge, one of the Game Bitey's games of the year for this past year. And rumors are abounding that a new video game based on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles graphic novel, The Last Ronin, is in the works. And this is coming out of Paramount Global. Yeah. So I guess the way this is, so Ninja Turtles originally, the comics are way different from the movies and the cartoon and all of that. They kind of like take place out in the universe or in the future. And the turtles aren't just like blue, purple, red, orange. They all wear red costumes, or whatever.
Masks.
So in this Last Ronin thing, there is one surviving Ninja Turtle, and I'm not even 100% sure we know who it is, because he carries all these different weapons that the Ninja Turtles
use. Oh, he's not like a fifth turtle? I assumed he was from somewhere else.
I don't think so. Now, I have not read this, so this is all secondhand information for me, but the idea is that there's this one turtle, he wears like a black bandana, and he's like the one lone wolf survivor of whatever has happened, and... it's sort of a dark futuristic New York. And I guess they eventually do reveal the identity at some point, but
TMNT
anyway.
40,000.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like that. So the thing is, the reason why I mentioned God of War, is that this game is sort of based on a, kind of making a mature version of this and, third person action, very, very grim and very highly produced version of this universe. And I think it sounds pretty cool. I don't know if the generational Roblox to Fortnite, and maybe I'm somewhere up here in the Ninja Turtles. I don't know if that's, where I'd place myself, but I actually think that Ninja Turtles is still cool, I guess. And I'm even kind of looking forward to this movie, even though the Ninja Turtles are
with Ninja Turtles? It just kind of petered out at some point, didn't it?
Well, I think what kind of happened, at least what I can tell, is there have been a lot of different reboots, and they've all been kind of dumb. So there have been Ninja Turtles cartoons for a few years, but like I've never been interested.
Well, I mean, like back in like 1992 or whatever, like what happened? It just kind of died off.
I think it did. I think it did. And then, it took 10 years before people really came back to it. And then nobody really liked it. Because I know there was one where there was like a fifth, like Lady Turtle. And then that cartoon came and went. And then now there's one.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, yeah. I can't remember her name. She had some sort of like Mona Lisa. She had some sort of Renaissance-y girly name. But anyway, so it's been going on. But this is coming out. People are excited about it. And I'm looking forward to it as well.
Wow, okay.
Last item of news that I've got here, Dale. Who would have thunk it? GameStop has posted its financial earnings for 2022 and surprisingly have made a profit against all odds. $48.2 million for the fourth quarter in 2022. Huh. And this is in the face of the previous fourth quarter earnings of minus $147 million.
When was the whole like meme stock thing?
I want to say that was a year.
That wasn't within the fiscal 2022, right? I think it was before that.
I don't think so.
I wonder if that has any bearing at all on...
I'm not sure. And I don't know what happened to those guys. Because for a while, the whole thing was that they were just like holding on to the stuff and people were driving up the price.
They were buying it more and more and more to drive that price up.
Yeah. And I don't know whatever really happened to it. I kind of wondered. Maybe they like secretly assassinated them. But
that's probably what happened.
One of the reports that is coming out of this is that GameStop has achieved this amazing turnaround by drastically cutting costs, which typically means like you've got one employee holding down the whole store for a while. From what I understand, GameStop is planning to cut themselves almost completely out of Europe. They're just sort of retracting in general. And but the flip side is that they are making money somehow. They're probably selling a lot more kitsch these days. But
I haven't been in one in a very long time, but I think that that was the direction that they were going.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And I don't think any of us here on this show is really a regular patron of GameStop. And in fact, I think mostly we were presiding over its demise.
Yes. I was laughing maniacally.
They seem to be bouncing back a little bit.
They almost like hit bankruptcy like at one point, I thought.
I mean, they may have even been under some sort of supervised restructuring.
Yeah,
or something.
Probably.
But anyway, so whatever they're doing seems to be making somebody some money, and we'll have to wait and see if the days of the brick and mortar video game shop are still being prolonged here. But I guess Godspeed to everybody there who's, you know, the one guy, and, you know, everybody who's in there browsing the DS selection for 5 hours. All right. And Dale, I think that's going to do it for the news this week. Yeah. But we are not done yet. We've got the news speed run here with all kinds of good stuff. So start that music and let's get her going. Nice.
That's the music this week.
Well, the first item I've got here on the speedrun is that WB Multiverses, the much maligned, and yet I keep holding a torch
for this
bar
thing. For Warner Brothers.
Yeah, that's right. And they, you know, they've made kind of a decent run at integrating a whole bunch of different IPs. Currently has its days numbered for the year 2023. It's being taken offline at the end of June in conjunction with its opened beta status. But they are planning to bring it back in 2024 once it goes into, I don't know.
That's a long time from now. I mean,
it kind of is. I suspect that they're maybe going to be retooling a bunch of things. I mean, I know that it was wildly popular for about 2 weeks, and then they just kind of, you know.
Was that people making fun of it? Or is it actually a good idea?
I was interested to see what would happen when Shaggy fought the Powerpuff Girls, but I guess that was just me.
Oh. Well, Microsoft ending the $1 Game Pass Ultimate trial program for new users. However, they are going to explore other future promotions. So, yeah, I wonder.
I wonder how cognizant they are. I don't know. Here's the thing for me. They still have, and we've talked about it on this show several times, like they still have this weird loophole where it will convert your Xbox Gold time.
Yeah.
If you're starting from Gold, and then by like a month of Game Pass Ultimate, it will convert the whole thing. And they must be aware of that. Like they've got to be cognizant.
I think they've maybe not encouraged that, but they've definitely turned a blind eye to it. I think they have to be, like you said, I think they have to be aware of it. So.
Yeah. I'm not interested in paying the full pop for Game
but
Pass.
But either
Ultimate.
Way,
it's a great service.
They have you on their service paying money for it. Even
that's
if it's
correct.
Not if it's not as much as you might have been paying
that
otherwise,
is correct.
You are still paying money.
That is correct. And, you know, if you think back a couple weeks, they had been underneath their targets for Game Pass subscribership. And that was like their one thing, like that, you know, from what we understand, CEOs at, you know, C-level executives, I guess, at Microsoft are being incentivized specifically on that.
That was
so
the metric.
Yeah, we got to assume that some lucrative programs are maybe in the works, and I'm all for that.
So. Huh.
PC users, if you've been hanging on to your old operating system, now may be the time to change. Valve is ending support for Windows 7 and Windows 8. At the beginning of next year, January 1st, 2024, the client will no longer install on those old platforms.
Diehards, I salute ye. Valve also opens a Counter-Strike 2 limited beta, and people are idling on CSGO to try to be invited to the party selected, or something?
Yeah.
Does that work?
I don't know. Well, it did for a while, but they said that they made those decisions about who those invites were going to before they actually opened up the Counter-Strike 2 beta. I will say, I have not played Counter-Strike in many moons, but it is interesting to see some of what they've changed. I actually looked at a comparison video of the things they're doing, you know, like volumetric flashbang, you know, smoke grenades and things like that, and a lot of kind of under the hood, I guess, ping and latency is a thing, and so they've got some whole system to kind of account for all of that, and it looks cool. You know, the funny thing was to me that they showed all these maps and none of them was D-Dust, so I don't know.
Is the reign of D-Dust finally broken? Ended?
I don't know. It's hard to say. Speaking of reigns ending, E3, which is slated, kind of, for a big comeback this year, but unfortunately without Microsoft, without Nintendo, without Sony.
Without
Ubisoft. Now, Ubisoft has pulled out of E3 to do their own Ubisoft Direct sort of thing, and I've seen everybody, I mean, even the people at Devolver, you know, Devolver Digital was like, well, we used to just, you know, rent out the parking lot across the street and grill bratwurst and stuff, but we're not going to do it this year, so.
I had some good bratwurst in Chicago. Some good schnitzel.
That's good. They've got a whole Polish community there, but, you know, the final cut, I think, was that the E3 ball pit has pulled out of E3, and so you really know it's bad then.
Fret not, because the screenwriter of the movie Dune, is going to be adapting Gears of War for Netflix, which, okay.
Dune was a pretty decent adaptation. This is, I guess John Spates, who worked on Dune and on Doctor Strange, is going to be doing a... And this is a film, by the way. This is not a TV show. This is actually a feature film.
Oh, is it? Interesting. Yeah. It's a feature film.
I think there's enough material in the Gears of War lore to make something. Huh.
I wonder if it's going to be, like, retelling the first game or, like, an origin story or something.
It would
something.
Have to be, like, what's that, Emergence? Like, where all the locusts Emergence come up out Day. Of the... Yeah. And, you know, you could get a pretty decent Starship Troopers-style... thing going on with it, and
that would be pretty epic if they did a Star Wars if it was like a Paul Verhoeven Star Wars Trooper take on Gears of War. That could be cool. Interesting.
We reported last week the untimely death of Lance Reddick. Well, the people over at Destiny 2 at Bungie said that there's actually going to be more Zavala content to come because Reddick had had a bunch of work done in the can in advance of his of his death, so we're still going to get some more Zavala, and at least until they run out of that, we'll
That's good to know.
A little bit more Lance Reddick in our lives.
Yeah, I mean, always a good thing, in my opinion. Yeah. Redfall, the game coming from Arkane about 4-player cooperative vampire slaying,
vampires,
I guess. Reportedly canceled for PS5 because, of course, they're owned by Microsoft now. So.
Right. Which is interesting. This is the latest volley in that whole he said, she said, who's a monopoly, who's not. And actually, incidentally, not related to this news, but I feel like I've seen the tide kind of turning in favor of Microsoft to complete this Activision Blizzard purchase. But this is one of the, you know, the big acquisitions of Bethesda, and so Arkane came along with that. And so the foul that's being cried now is that this game that originally was going to come to PlayStation 5 was canceled by Microsoft after these studios were acquired. Last news item I've got here is that if you haven't done your taxes, well, the day is drawing near, and one of the potential options...
I haven't done it
yet. Dale, have I got a proposal for you. An anime-based dating simulator called Tax Heaven 3000, with a probably some Lolita, you know... I'm sure it's all above, you know, I mean, this isn't... We're not getting lewd or anything here.
I'm doing the Vincent McMahon meme here. Keep going.
So, a dating sim... And this girl will help you to do your taxes. Like, this is actually it will help you to prepare your actual 1040 or whatever it is that you've got to do to do your taxes. However, regrettably, for some reason or other, this game that was set to release on April 4th has actually been approved or whatever the legitimacy standard is there at Valve. And
that's okay, because you can file for an extension with the IRS.
So. Well, you can also maybe look for this one over at itch.io, yeah. And you know, get your taxes done and get your lolly dating simulator on as well. Why not? Two great tastes that taste great together. Guys, that is going to do it for our speedrun news. That's going to do it for this episode of your Game Byte Show podcast. I want to thank you for making it all the way to the end with us. Dale Jones, thank you very much, my friend, for contributing your Adepticon doings and helping us out with the news and the Destiny guns and all that good stuff. Guys, if you've got any thoughts about the games and the events that we've talked about, if you want to share that with us, come over to our Discord server. You can find that over at GameByteShow.com. There is a many, in fact, links to the invite to our server. You can come join us there and chit-chat with us on a daily basis. You can also find us at YouTube.com/GameByteShow if you'd like to do this thing live with us and send us some comments in the YouTube video. You're certainly welcome to do that as well. And you know, of course, any other venues that that you see fit, we technically are still on. I mean, I still tweet this thing out on Twitter, but whatever, wherever you want to find us, we're out here hanging out, having a good time, and we'll do this thing every week and bring some of the guys back in after spring vacation happens, and, you know, we can work our way around Jared's schedule, and, you know, Dale and I don't mind, though. I think we get good energy just the two of us, so.
Sure.
But folks, I think that is going to do it for this episode of your Game Byte Show podcast, and we will see you next time.
Be seeing you.